This week in the studio, it's Tommy Shaw and James Young of Styx. Plus band co-founder Dennis DeYoung. For part one of the box set. Styx A&M album.
It's funny because I had the title The Grand Illusion during Equinox. That's when it first occurred to me.
Light up, everybody. Join us in this celebration.
When I think of Lorelei, my head turns all around. As gentle as a butterfly, she moves. Sound. I call her on the telephone. She says be there by 8. Tonight's the night she's moving in, and I can hardly wait. The way she moves, ooh, I gotta say, Lorelei, let's live together, brighter than the stars.
John Cerulewski left Styx suddenly, right before they just released a new album on A&M. They'd been on a local label before that, and they were getting ready to do a national tour. They had a new manager, and they didn't really want to lose Stride, so they put out feelers to find somebody quickly, and Vos suggested me. There was another guy who had better hair than me, but he couldn't sing.
Hey everybody, this is James Young.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Dennis DeYoung with my buddy Redbeard.
If you stood on stage with me early that afternoon of summer 1975 in one end zone of the Bowling Green State University football stadium, it would come as no surprise to find that the Chicago band Styx was at a major crossroads then. After no less than 4 albums on tiny independent Midwest label Wooden Nickel Records, Styx's sum total of success was a sole mid-chart single, Lady, which had taken over 2 years of promotion to establish. Unknown that day was that the band's long road would be rewarded with a major label signing to A&M Records. That arduous struggle would soon cost them the resignation of one of two original guitar players, John Cerulewski, even before that first major label release, Equinox, appeared in December that year. From my vantage point, as the outdoor day-long festival MC, Styx found themselves near the bottom of a 6-band lineup which required them to perform utilizing only half of the stage and probably only half of the PA as well, standing just behind guitarist James Young's amplifier. It appeared that JY might have slept in that tattered maroon velvet thrift store jacket which he wore on stage that day. Yet, revisiting that 5th Styx album Equinox, it's clear to hear the signposts in the songwriting and creative leadership led by band co-founder then Dennis DeYoung on such melodic songs as Light Up, Lorelei, written with JY, and the heavier mini-epic Sweet Madam Blue, precursors all to eventual career-breaking The Grand Illusion 2 years and 2 albums later. Here's former member Dennis DeYoung with me in the studio.
I knew the Panazos. They were a couple years younger than me, and but I didn't hang around with them because, you know, when somebody's 2 years younger than you at that age, they're like 100 years younger than you. But I was walking down the street one day. It was the summertime, and the doors and windows were open, you know, and I heard music coming from inside, and I went up on the porch, and I knew Johnny's and Chucky's older sister. And I went in. I says, "What's going on?" They says, "Well, they have a band." And I stood there, and I watched them, and there was 3 guys, just John and Chuck and a kid playing accordion. How about it? I want to let people, guitar players, know, like John Mellencamp and the Talking Heads and Paul Simon, who are, and all the people who are bringing accordions back now, all these guitar players, that they were personally responsible for killing the careers of thousands of young men in this country by playing electric guitars. So they owe us big. Anyway, I played accordion since I was 7 years old. You know, I was an Italian kid. And when I saw the band, and I saw this kid that was playing accordion, he'd been playing like about 2 years. And at that time, I'd been playing about 8 years. And I was much better than he was, only because I'd been playing much longer. So I told the Panazzo, says, listen, why don't you come over to my basement? Let's play. So I dug out the old squeeze box. And guess what? The next week, they said goodbye to that guy. And we've been together. We were together ever since. Then in 1970, James Young, J.Y., joined the band, and that was the nucleus of Styx.
Was a Dennis DeYoung song from the surprisingly deep 1975 Styx album Equinox, their first for major label A&M Records. A band at the local level is not that different from a street gang, with turf wars battling for the same limited gigs. And Styx guitarist-songwriter James Young was not in the same band as Dennis DeYoung. Not yet.
We were in two rival bands on the south side of Chicago. They played things that were a little bit more mainstream, let's say, the things that were vocally oriented, Three Dog Night, Crosby, Stills and Nash, the Beatles, and the group I was in, I was definitely the counterculture individual, very much a Hendrix fanatic, and, you know, trying to do the tracks that were, you know, obscure ones that we really liked that nobody knew. And as a consequence, my group rarely got any jobs because we just were not in that kind of demand, and these guys were. I know I was a real arrogant young man, and I know that I annoyed Dennis greatly. They lost a guitarist, and two guys in my group went into Jehovah's Witnesses because they thought rock and roll was the music of the devil, and of course they were right.
When I think of Lorelei, my head turns all around. As gentle as a butterfly, she moves without a sound. I call her on the telephone, she says be there by 8. Tonight's the night she's moving in, and I can hardly wait.
Like they had on the Styx hit Lady, which landed them the new deal with A&M Records, Lorelei was another catchy Dennis DeYoung, James J.Y. Young song from the 1975 Equinox album. Southern man Tommy Shaw, a singing-songwriting native of Montgomery, Alabama, found himself struggling in the mid-70s Chicago local bar music scene. But even then, Tommy was impressed by a Styx secret weapon.
How important to the concept is having three lead singers with totally distinct vocal styles and textures.
And willing to sing harmony with each other. That's one thing. It's one thing to be a singer, but to be a lead singer and to be willing to be part of a chorus at the same time. Because that requires you abandoning putting your own spin on the song and singing along with somebody else. That to me, that's one thing that distinguishes Styx, aside from the three lead vocals like that. But it was a huge help for us because we were able to not only just sing the songs that required one voice, but when it came time for the big chorus, it was a piece of cake for us.
Time after time, I sit and I wait for your call. I know I'm a fool, but what can I say? Whatever the price, I'll pay for you. Madam Blue. Once, long ago, a word from your lips and the world turned around. But somehow you've changed your so far away. I long for the past and dream of the days with you. Madam Blue.
Child anymore. Sweet.
what a powerful performance is Sweet Madam Blue from the Equinox album by Styx, written by Dennis DeYoung. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Styx current members Tommy Shaw and James J.Y. Young, plus band co-founder Dennis DeYoung for the A&M years, 1975 through 1984.
Hey, everybody, this is James Young.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
And Dennis DeYoung, and we're in the studio
with the man himself, Redbeard.
Thank you, guys. No sooner had Styx released Equinox, their first album on new major label A&M Records, when lead guitarist John Cyrulewski quit, leaving the band and manager to scramble to find a replacement for an impending tour. Former member Dennis DeYoung remembers the first time he ever heard the name Tommy Shaw.
I remember it vividly because I never even heard of Tommy Shaw, but we were looking for a replacement, and our road manager had known Tommy because he played in a bar band in Chicago for many years. And he says, let me give this guy a call. I think he's terrific. And I said, fine. Because Tommy was playing in a bowling alley, playing acoustic guitar. He wasn't even playing rock and roll for the last 6-7 months, I don't think.
Styx, guitarist, singer, songwriter, Tommy Shaw.
When John Cyrulewski left Styx suddenly, right before they just released a new album on A&M. They'd been on a local label before that, and they were getting ready to do a national tour. They had a new manager, and they didn't really want to lose stride, so they put out feelers to find somebody quickly, and Bose suggested me. There was another guy who had better hair than me, but he couldn't sing.
I used to like to walk the street and narrow line. I used to think that everything was fine. Sometimes I'd sit and gaze for days through sleepless dreams, all alone and trapped in time. All alone and trapped in time. I wonder what tomorrow has in mind for me. Or am I even in its mind at all? Perhaps I'll get a chance to look ahead and see. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Well, tell me where I'm going. I don't know where I've been. Tell me, won't you tell me and then tell me again? My heart is breaking, my body's aching, and I don't know where to go. So tell me, won't you tell me?
Hired initially as a second guitarist to augment the live sound, Tommy Shaw quickly revealed a triple threat talent, wasting no time in contributing the title song to the next Styx album, Crystal Ball. That was in 1976. Here's James J.Y. Young.
We really felt that, you know, between the four of us, we could keep the band going. We just needed someone to actually do the parts on stage. And so to have Tommy be as aggressive a writing contributor as he was, and such a stage presence and performer that he was, and, you know, were bonuses that we didn't expect to get. But certainly, I would say Tommy arriving in the group was sort of the beginning of us really being a Super Bowl contender, you might say.
Tommy Shaw of Styx.
Styx was a very hard thing to get people to believe in. You know, you got, you know, most bands have one particular sound. They have one guy that you focus on and one style of songwriting. We were told many times by the record company that you've got to kind of homogenize your sound because this is just not, this is too hard for us as a record company to promote. They had no idea that we were pushing it as far as we could. We were really so different from each other that we were trying as hard as we could to have a unified sound, and that was the best we could do. A good Styx album was like listening to your favorite radio station because the songs flowed well together. We really spent a lot of time and energy making sure that the right song followed the previous song, and so it flowed. It had continuity to it, and those were not accidents.
Former Styx member Dennis DeYoung.
It's funny because, you know, we had done Equinox, which was a fantastic record. It had done respectably, but it had not been the success we thought it would be. And Crystal Ball actually sold less than Equinox. So we were like, we were feeling, uh-oh. We're on that downward slide a little bit. And we couldn't understand it. It always happened slowly for us. I mean, after The Grand Illusion, things always happen more quickly. I'll never forget because we started on tour with, like, Kiss and Aerosmith. We were doing support on the East Coast because we had never really played there in any sort of way. And, you know, the typical thing when you come on first, people are yelling for the other band. But by the time we got into the third song, you know, I always say that I think we were responsible for the downfall of a few artists at that particular time because we were way ready, okay? This was a good live band. We were much too good to be supporting anybody who wasn't ready to be prepared to take on the energy and the challenge that Styx was presenting. Because we'd paid our dues, we'd played a billion shows, we kind of struck like a thunderbolt. So what happened was, is like in the middle of that Grand Illusion tour, we went from being a support act to being a full-blown headliner, and we never looked back. But I remember many times, Redbeard, standing behind the stage and looking up and seeing the headliner with all the big amps and all the big gear and the PA and the lights and wondering if ever we would have the opportunity to be up there. Many times backstage I would look at that and say, geez, I wonder if we're ever going to get our opportunity to be there. Initially, you know, we used to stand behind stage all the time, John Panazzo and I, and we'd when we were supporting and see the mounds of amplifiers and equipment for the headliners and the lights. And we used to look and say, when will this ever be our turn? And the Grand Illusion was the thing, obviously, that was the catalyst to allow us to have our turn to get up there and, you know, and be the headliners and, you know, have all the lights and sound and, you know, aggravate the support bands that were on our shows, J.Y., to give them 13 feet of space and 27 minutes and no lights.
Payback time.
But we never really did that. And always grateful that it happened.
Nothing.
Mademoiselle was a tasty Tommy Shaw, Dennis DeYoung song on the Styx 1976 album Crystal Ball. Still to come, the talent, hard work, and dreams pay off with 5 multi-platinum albums in a row. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Styx frontmen Tommy Shaw and James Young, plus former member Dennis DeYoung for the A&M years, 1975 through 1984.
Hey, everybody, this is James Young.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
And we are in the studio.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Dennis DeYoung with my buddy Redbeard.
Once again, thank you all. Beginning with 1977's Grand Illusion album, followed by Pieces of Eight in 78, Cornerstone 1979, Paradise Theater in 1981, and the controversial concept-heavy Kilroy was here in 1983, Styx sold platinum and multi-platinum each time, resulting in being voted America's favorite band in the nationwide Gallup poll. We've dedicated entire episodes of In the Studio to Grand Illusion, Pieces of Eight, and Paradise Theater. You can find them at inthestudio.net. Because it contained the number one hit ballad, Babe, in retrospect, 1979 Styx album Cornerstone maybe should have been retitled Tipping Point. Here's Tommy Shaw.
And it just goes to show you, in a band like Styx, too, a lot of our biggest songs that we play in concerts, they were never even attempted as pop singles, yet they're the fabric of the fans who still come to see us. The singles game, as you know, is a very it's a very strange place to be. You know, you live and die by it, and you know if you have a number one and then your follow up goes to number five, you're a colossal failure. You know, and careers can be very short in the singles game. But a band like The Who, with songs that you don't look at their song list and wonder how far up the charts they went, because you believe in your hearts that those songs are meaningful and they belong in your life's playlist.
Dennis DeYoung with James J.Y. Young.
Even though Babe was a big hit record and went and sold 3 million copies, there was still a serious fear within management and with Tommy and J.Y. that the success of Babe was going to adversely affect our next release. This was definitely the belief, because don't forget, it hadn't, all right, you could look at Cornerstone and say, hey, it sold as much as the last one, which was a hard rocking album, but the success after the success of Babe dies down, people are not going to respond to the next thing because you've gone and made this ballad, all right? So there was a great deal of apprehension as to what would happen next in the band, and it was a pulling apart. It was really the first big split internally in the band, where there was this fear, I think, really in a large part probably motivated from management. It came from that, you know, there was really a firm belief from our manager that Babe was a very big mistake for us. Okay, so that was, this is the premise by which this album is going to begin under.
It was definitely a concern, and it manifested itself in definitely some serious discussions.
Yeah, it was a very tenuous period for us as a band because of that, you know, that feeling that we'd made a mistake. Even though we'd had success, we'd made a mistake. We entered into Paradise Theater with this kind of cloud hanging over us. But listen, this is part of being in a band. You know,
this is a Redbeard first, ladies and gentlemen. He's gotten us to talk about this out loud.
But it's okay because really people have to understand that the Beatles had disagreements. Every band has disagreements when there's more than one writer and more than one creative force, and there is no one way that is the right way. That's the fact of life. So when we entered into this Paradise Theater stage, there was really, it was a very tenuous situation.
Nevertheless, a fact about which there is no debate is that Styx had a multifaceted appeal because lyricists Tommy Shaw, James Young, and particularly Dennis DeYoung fearlessly addressed themes torn right from the headlines of the times. J.Y. admits that not everybody got it, though.
I really think that certainly thematically, The Grand Illusion, I think less than half of our audience probably picked up on really what was being said. Pieces of Eight, maybe 10%. You know, I mean, people listen to the music first, especially with a band like Styx. It's the music, it's the sound of the voices and the instruments playing together that people respond to, and the rhythmic feel. And one element of what we do, of the creative process, doesn't necessarily reach everyone the first time they see the film, or even the second time they hear the music. We're trying to create something that is not only going to survive the first listening, but is going to survive the 100th listening. And there has to be something of substance there.
Some of those substantial issues that Styx had tackled prior to 1983's bold Kilroy Was Here album was media proliferation and distortion of the American dream on Grand Illusion, unemployment, urban decay, and a new American underclass on Pieces of Eight and Paradise Theater. But with Kilroy Was Here, Dennis DeYoung wanted to transform the Styx concerts into a theatrical presentation to further his unease about encroaching technology and the rise of fear-mongering in the neoconservative movement.
You know, Kilroy was a lot of things. It was men in sponge outfits, wasn't it? It was guys with masks on.
Delightful masks, yeah.
It was moving pictures. It was a lot of stuff, but really what it was
five dummies on stage.
I looked at J.Y. one day and I said, J.Y., do me a favor, will you? Are we going to go to Madison Square Garden and play this? Are we going to play another rock show? I mean, can we do something different? This was the beginning, all right? The germ was... Listen, this is the fifth time we're going to go to Madison Square Garden. Maybe we could do something different. You know, our shows are always, you know, rather lavish, but... So, we did...
Delightfully overstated.
J.Y. and I held hands, went to the end of the diving board, and jumped in. we said, we'll do this thing, and...
Turned out to be the deep end.
It was the deep end.
You're wondering who I am.
Secret, I've got a secret.
Machine or mannequin.
Secret, I've got a secret.
With parts made in
Mr. Robato,
I wanna thank you.
Robato, Mr. much technology. Machines to save our lives. Machines dehumanize. The time has come at last.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
The ambitious and controversial Mr. Roboto was the lead single from Styx, and Kilroy was here in 1983. Styx guitarist James Young admitted that their travels abroad revealed that some of the loudest American voices at home, espousing isolationism and xenophobia, were by the ill-informed and least traveled.
You know, people in this country have a real tendency to turn and blame others in this country for their woes and their problems. I mean, it's an obvious thing that we're all guilty of to some degree, but we had extensively traveled in Europe and in other places by this point in time, and we'd seen, okay, we have problems here in this country, you know, and there are inequities, and there probably always will be, because we are human.
But we were raised America, right or wrong.
Well, that's how we were raised. We had found the need to protest the Vietnam War at that stage in our lives. It was not America, right or wrong, for my generation. You know, it was Richard Nixon is wrong, Lyndon Johnson was wrong, John F. Kennedy was wrong to send troops over there, and this was something we should have never gotten into, and we had to not say America right or wrong, but protest this.
Being arguably the biggest band in America at the beginning of the 80s also made Styx a big target for an emerging wave of detractors who picked rock music as evidence of an apocalyptic decay in America's world dominance, according to Dennis DeYoung.
I was on Nightline with these guys. You want to come on and defend rock and roll? I said, not really, but I'll come on and defend the First Amendment and, you know, the idea that we were Snowblind as an anti-drug song, and you're saying it's about Satan. That's pretty weird. I think it illustrated to me personally that there was a growing mood of censorship coming in this country. You know, the Reagan administration had just come in, and these fundamentalist guys, and Jerry Falwell, the moral majority. This was all the infant stages of that.
The right wing was feeling its power at that stage.
Yeah. You know, and really, but the great thing about a democracy in this country is that, you know, there'll be an ebb and flow to this stuff. You just have to, like, weather it out a little bit.
Your girl.
lampooning hysterical accusations of satanic messages secretly hidden in Styx songs. Backwards, mind you. The Sultan of Sarcasm, James Young, wrote a song and sang Heavy Metal Poisoning on the 1983 album Kilroy Was Here. It was a highlight of their live theatrical presentation that year, which was bold and innovative, but ultimately probably ahead of its time. Kilroy turned out to be the final studio album for this lineup of Styx, but band co-founder Dennis DeYoung takes us full circle, back to the early sound of Styx, which I heard blasting out on Chicago radio stations in 1972.
The reality of Styx's music, even though JY and I disagree and have disagreed about music, we've been able to coexist for almost 20 years. And if you think of Lady, if you think of that as the quintessential Styx song, that is really a perfect example of the two guys who have opposite points of view on music getting together and being in the same band. I think Lennon and McCartney, not to draw any analogies between them and us.
They were totally different, and that's why it worked.
When Lennon went on his own, to me, he was too much over there, and McCartney was too much over there. And when they were together, they did something special. That's a fact of life. And it's not to be looked at as a negative. It's to be looked at as a strength if you can harness it and reach a common ground.
I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, co-leaders of Styx to this day, Tommy Shaw and James J.Y. Young. Also thanks to my buddy, Dennis DeYoung. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.